Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. We're delighted to have you with us today. And today we're going to be talking about the power of positive thinking and ways that we can bolster our own immune systems and our spirits as well in the face of serious medical challenges. This program is brought to you each week by the VHL Family Alliance. VHL stands for von Hippel-Lindau disease. And we've been dealing with a complex medical condition, many of us for generations. So we've learned various kinds of coping skills that we wanted to share with people. And we also like to take this opportunity to learn from others who have been dealing with complex medical conditions or disabilities. So let me play you a little bit of information about VHL, and then we'll be back to talk with our special guest today.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Thank you very much, and I hope that you will check out our website at vhl.org and also thepowerfulpatient.org. Powerfulpatient.org has the catalog of all of our shows for the last 3 years now. So we'll hope that you'll find some things of interest. And today we have a special guest. Welcome to Denise DeSimone. Hi, Denise. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, thank you. Denise has a book out called From Stage 4 to Center Stage, so her journey with cancer. So, Denise, would you please share with us some about your journey through cancer and the inspiration for writing this book?
Yes, in 2005, I was diagnosed with Stage 4 squamous cell carcinoma of the throat and neck. And I was given 3 months to live. I had a very short window of time to move into treatment, or I would have had possibly 90 days at the maximum to survive. And so I was immediately taken into Boston Mass Eye and Ear. I live in the Boston area. And I was brought into the hospital, and they inserted a feeding tube into my stomach. And that's how I was fed for 9 months. I lost all ability to eat, pretty much to drink. I couldn't drink water or anything for a minimum of 3 months. And then I had to learn how to talk again. And I was retrained to eat once it was time to eat by eating baby food. So it was a rigorous treatment time. And it was a time of every emotion you can possibly think of. And most importantly, it was a time for deep reflection and to look at what my life was for and about. And I came out the other side inspired to write a book and share my lessons with the world.
Now, did you have any warning of this before your diagnosis? So were there early warning signs where it might have been diagnosed earlier to give you a better chance?
Sure. I had been complaining for about 2 to 3 months to my doctor, my primary care, and I had seen his nurse practitioner, and I was very tired, but Joyce, I had been riding my bicycle for those many months, training to do a fundraiser that would raise money for children with cancer through the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. and I had been riding my bicycle for training purposes about 100-plus miles a week. And although I was complaining I was tired, pointing to the fact that I was exerting a lot of energy made them think that that was the reason, although my blood work was a little compromised. They thought I might have mono, but then they said I didn't have mono. So it could have been detected a bit earlier, and I had then a lump on the left side of my neck, and that's how the cancer presented. And that was present for about 6 or 7 weeks, and my doctor thought it would retreat on its own and didn't really feel the need to see me. But then when he finally saw me, he was very apologetic and told me he thought I had had lymphoma, which is not what I had at all.
So did you have like a sore throat or something like that too?
Yeah, I felt awful. I was tired. I felt run down. I had a sore throat. I had a lump on my neck. So it was a combination of things.
Right, right. So it was about a 3-month window when you were having symptoms, but they hadn't quite clued in yet that what was going on.
Mhm. Yeah. And then I had gone to a doctor and I had a biopsy done of the lump on the left side of my neck, and even that doctor told me that he sees this all the time and it was probably nothing to worry about. But then he woke me in the operating room and said, you have a very serious cancer and you need to move quickly.
Yeah. And then, as you say, you have good resources in the Boston area, and they put you on this treatment. And the treatment lasted 9 months?
Well, the treatment, my feeding tube was in for 9 months, because what happens when you radiate somebody's head and neck and throat with so much radiation as they had to radiate me, you lose all ability. You lose the ability to eat, and I lost the ability to even swallow because my esophagus had been fried by the radiation.
Right, so you have like a radiation burn?
Oh, I had multiple burns all over my face, my neck, my chest, around the back of my neck, inside my mouth. I had probably at one point 500 what you would call canker sores just amassed inside of my throat and mouth. It was I wouldn't wish this on anybody ever. I wish there was never a chance anybody had to go through this again.
It sounds terribly uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable.
And then, of course, with the feeding tube, it would also limit your activities considerably, right?
Absolutely. I was somebody who was at the gym all the time and walking and very very involved in exercising and health, and if I walked to the corner, I was happy. After 3 months, I could walk to the corner and back, so it limited everything I could do. And when you have a lot of radiation, you are so tired, you can't do much of anything, and when you're not being nourished properly the way you've been used to being nourished, my energy level was very, very low.
So as you say, you had a lot of work to do just to keep your spirits up. So, and you did a lot of meditation and reflection during this time. But I know that when you go around and speak, you talk about how to keep your spirits up and the power of that. Can you share some of that with us, please?
Absolutely. Not only keep my spirits up, but I made a vow that as much as my body was going to get racked by this treatment on the physical side, even more so my spirit would soar higher and higher. So the more I suffered physically, the more I would soar and enjoy being involved spiritually with God in my life and take a closer walk with God. And one of the things that I did is I looked at this as a way to embrace and befriend my cancer and learn from it, so I could then create a dialogue with the cancer that would give me the reasons that it was doing what it was doing, the reasons for it to come into my life at this time. I sat quietly, I meditated, I asked it questions. I actually gave it a name, as you would a friend if you made friends with a new person. And I wrote down the things. I asked a question, and I just let spirit talk, and my higher self gave me my insight I needed. And I learned a lot of things, and I learned that it's very critical to healing to get to a place where we can love ourselves very deeply, because my cancer said at one point, the more you love yourself, the less reason for me to be around, and the more light you can hold in your being, the less room there will be for me. And that made a lot of sense to me, and it made me realize,
right.
It made me realize that whatever was in the way of more light coming in and infusing my being, the more I needed to take steps toward removing the density, whether it would be to express the anger that might have been clogging me, or the fear that was clogging me, or any of the other emotions, forgiveness that was clogging me that needed to be expressed. And so I went to work, and I got into the process of looking at all of that, and that's what I wrote the book about, the lessons, the life lessons. And what I love about this, Joyce, is that people are coming to me who have no connection to cancer themselves personally, but they're saying, wow, your book has picked me up and turned me around, and this book is transformed my life. And they're buying books and reading it and buying books for other people, and I'm so happy that what I intended has actually come to fruition, and that was to write an honest and very vulnerable book that would help people, whatever struggles they were faced with.
That's great. So it's interesting terminology, because usually people talk about fighting their cancer.
Yes.
And you're talking about embracing your cancer, befriending your cancer in order to really conquer it. Or maybe I used the wrong term there, because I went back into warfare terminology. So, you know, but you say it. What would you say about the distinction between using warfare terminology and trying to beat your cancer, which is what most people use, and the terminology that you're using about befriending your cancer?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And the way I look at this is, you know, cancer is a disease, and the word disease is a very interesting word. You know, we are born into living in an easy, graceful place when we're born in as children of God. And disease is nothing but a disruption of that ease and grace in which we live. Yet when we have a disease, we have to call forth our warrior to get the strength that we need. But for me, to battle this cancer, a lot of people say we're going to look at this as a, you know, the cancer is the enemy and we're going to go conquer it. And you know what? Look around the world. We're not getting too far with all the wars that are waging, right? There's a war on drugs. There's a war on drunk driving. There's a war in Iraq. There's a war in Afghanistan. There's a war over in every pretty much part of the country in the world that you can, you know, spin the globe, put your finger on it. You could say, oh, they're having a war. And most people are having a war inside themselves. And I realize I don't want to, whatever this has created, this mini war inside of me, I'm stopping it right now. And the war that's been inside of me is going to now come into a place of wholeness, of healing, of light, of embracing, because more of me was healthy than was diseased. And so I just took all...
Very good point. Yeah, go ahead.
I took all the good cells that were already really healthy and happy, and we went and talked in a way that it's like what Gandhi did. You know, we start applying that on a personal level, get into the place where we can, all of this confluence of energies that is within us, bring it to a place where it's one, it's whole, it's peaceful, it's easy, it's graceful, it's healthy. You know, that's what Gandhi did. And if we start applying that kind of process to our own personal lives, you're going to have peace on earth before we know it, because peace on earth begins with each one of us doing that in our own lives.
That's very interesting. And, you know, the people with VHL that I normally deal with have a hereditary form of cancer. It's a risk factor for cancer. And a lot of people say that they're fighting their VHL. And one woman said to me one time, you know, at a certain point I realized that VHL was part of the fabric of me. And fighting VHL was like fighting me. And I had to embrace it and say, okay, this is part of me. We're going to get to live together my whole life. And we need to do that amicably instead of constantly fighting one another.
That's brilliant. And that's basically the premise of what I'm talking about. You know, while you were talking, I just had this image. And I had this image of two people who are have this maybe a pugnacious kind of energy going on. And all it takes is for one person to open their arms and say, I love you. No matter what has happened, I love you. And all of a sudden, everything melts away. They probably forget what they're talking about. And that's kind of what, that's the paradigm shift that I hope and pray that my book, my message, my talking can get out there to share with people to say, you know, just because I did this doesn't mean I'm the only one that could do it. And just because I did it doesn't mean you have to do this. But if there are people out there that are open to the possibility that this might be worth looking into and checking out and adopting, I think we're on, I think we're totally on to something.
Were there books or programs that you found helpful in making this transition within yourself?
Well, you know, I've read a lot of Louise Hay, and I've read a lot of Wayne Dyer and Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, and, you know, I've been involved in Unity Church for a really long time, and, you know, there's lots of books, and Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the founders of Unity. Myrtle Fillmore actually cured herself of a few different diseases through meditation and prayer, and she wrote many books about that, and I had those books next to me. I will admit, during my very ill time, I couldn't even read. I was so sick, I couldn't watch television, I couldn't read, but the only thing I made a commitment to do was to keep a journal about how I was feeling every day, which was helpful because that's a lot of what I took from to write the book. And
right, and we should underscore with people that you didn't rely exclusively on the spiritual. At the same time, you were doing the recommendations of your doctors to go through a really hellish treatment, and yet it was the only treatment that was known to be effective, and in your case it was certainly effective, but managing your emotions through a time of such constraint is particularly difficult, and being able to keep your spirits up and positive and knowing that you're going to succeed through the treatment is an essential part of surviving such a treatment.
Well, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up because there's a couple things, and I know we don't have a long time here, but one of the things is to keep your spirits up, you also have to get real. You can't just jump and get all spiritual. You know, I think it's very critical for one to express the anger, express the hurt, express the fear, express every single bit of it because that's who we are, and I had to get into the anger. I had to release. I bought a wiffle ball bat, and I would pound my bed and cry. And but see, you can't release and let more light in. Things are in the way. So I'm an advocate for express it all. And the other thing I did while I was going through, after I had a little chemo, I didn't do a lot of chemo. I didn't want it in my body, so my doctors listened to me about that. But I did a lot of radiation. And I'm also a Reiki master and very into a lot of alternative therapies, reflexology, Reiki. I've been teaching sound healing for many years. And people can go to my website, denisedesimone.com, and learn about all the alternatives I did and all of the products that I offer in addition to my book. But I did a lot of alternatives, and there's a plethora of them listed on my site where, you know, cancer doesn't like, well, hates actually oxygen, and it hates heat. So I went into a hyperbaric chamber to force oxygen into my cells. I went into an infrared sauna in order to heat the cells and pull the toxins right out of the cells at a very deep level. And I did all kinds of, I can't take the time now to tell you, but if you're interested at my website, you can learn about it.
Right, and we have another guest coming up in a week or two. Alan Smith has also written a book about the various kinds of complementary and alternative medicines that are available. And Reiki is very interesting. As a matter of fact, one of the VHL patients mentioned it to me today, that the Reiki practice was very helpful to him and his wife in slowing down the cancer process and stabilizing many of her tumors. So tell us a little bit about what Reiki is.
Well, Reiki is a Japanese word, R-E-I-K-I. Rei, R-E, means universal life force, and ki is energy, just like qi in the Chinese culture. Mm-hmm. And Reiki is nothing more than a form of hands-on healing where the practitioner is tuned into that energy, and you accept that universal life force into you, and you're a conduit. You're like the wire, you know, and mm-hmm. and if you would, a simple explanation of it is, you know, God and the universal intelligence is the plug, the wire, and you who are receiving the energy is like, would be considered the lamp. So when mm-hmm. I am working on somebody, it's an intelligence that knows exactly what to do, and our bodies are so smart. You know, they just know how to heal. They know what to do. We get all clogged up because we get ourselves in the way of the natural process, and Reiki just restores that natural process. It allows that intelligence to course through the person's being and allow them to get into a place of homeostasis, and it allows them to, in that time of receiving, just quiet down, let the energy go to where it needs to go, do what it needs to do. And it's also a kind of treatment that is stronger and stronger and stronger as you go about doing more of the Reiki. So when you're receiving a Reiki treatment, it's a very almost insidious kind of treatment where it gets stronger even after the treatment. It keeps it's like the gift that keeps on giving, if you will.
So this is one of a number of different methodologies to try to help integrate or reintegrate the body and the spirit and help to bring them into balance. Is that a fair description?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and so especially if you read through what Denise has to say on her website or if you read what Alan Smith has to say in his book, it'll give you an idea of the methodologies that exist. And you can try to determine what might be meaningful or helpful to you in your own particular situation. You know, what pains you're dealing with, what organ systems you're dealing with that may be out of balance and may need some assistance. And personally, I do that too. You sort of integrate what Western medicine has to offer and add to it some of what the Eastern modalities have to offer, because some of them are, as you indicate with Reiki, can be very powerful in helping you to bring your body and your spirit back together again in a constructive way.
You know, it's the difference between surviving and thriving.
Uh-huh.
And that's the key, because I've met a lot of people who've dealt with cancer, my particular type of cancer, and I will mm-hmm. honestly tell you that I am thriving. A lot of them do not have the strength in the immune systems. They're having trouble with all their teeth. Thank God. I mean, I am blessed. But therein lies the difference. And that's what I say in my book. You know, the difference between surviving and thriving is one of my chapters. And I talk about mm-hmm. different the things to do in the mental, emotionally, physically, and spiritual aspects of this whole journey. I talk about working, you know, with my medical doctors in the traditional medical field, as well as my naturopath, and as well as my shaman. I mean, there's mm-hmm. we're very complex beings, and I think it's time, you know, we have to allow people to embrace all aspects of it.
Right. And again, whatever spiritual modality works for you, you have a religion of your own. You don't have to change religions and believe in shamanism.
Right.
But, you know, add the things that help to restore meaning in your own life and help to integrate your body and your spirit in a way that works for you. And so just one,
be happy.
Go ahead.
Be happy.
Be happy,
yeah, do things,
absolutely.
Do things that make you happy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and even in the face of great challenges, you can find things that make you happy. And watch silly movies, or you know, talk to, do silly jokes with a friend, whatever works for you. Right.
Right.
So we want to remind everybody again: it's DeniseDeSimone.com. That's DeniseDeSimone.
No. I'll spell it for you.
So Denise DeSimone is DeSimone.com. At DeniseDeSimone.com, you can find her book, and you can actually request an autographed copy of her book from the website, or the book is also available, not with the autograph, from Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and other such suppliers. So from stage four to center stage. Denise, thank you so much for being with us.
The book is on audio as well. I did do an audio version because when people aren't feeling well or they're compromised, they don't have time or they don't want to read, I do have an audio book, but the only place you can get the audio is through my website.
And is it available also as an e-book or for Kindle?
Yep, you can get Kindle, you can get a Nook, you can get Kobo, all that's on my books and products page right on the website.
Excellent. Well, thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
Every day's a gift, and open it with a heart full of gratitude. Do things that make you happy and love yourself like you've never loved yourself before.
Very good. Thank you so much, Denise DeSimone, author of From Stage 4 to Center Stage. And again, you'll find a copy of this recording on powerfulpatient.org. And we hope that you'll subscribe to our podcast and continue listening with us. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody,
thank you.
For being with us. And we'll see you again next week. And be well and be a powerful patient. Thanks.